On the Bench. I'm your host for this episode, Reggie Sinone. I'm joined by Chris Nee, Zach Rothstein. And together, we are going to go over Florida State's final week of spring practice, indecision at quarterback, and maybe just quarterback recruiting not going splendid right now based on the crystal ball trends. Before we get into it, though, a shout out to our sponsors. First off, Chattanooga Whiskey, crushing it in the craft distillery game. At this point, you guys know the deal. Like, we've had so many of our listeners, of our Knowles 24/7 subscribers, try amazing juice, basically. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. Like, it is some of the best craft distillery whiskey that you're going to get, especially at like an ROI value-based proposition. I'm talking about it like it's a stock. It's just whiskey, and it's really, really good whiskey. You can find it all throughout the Southeast. Let me know, slide in the DMs, whatever, if you're having a hard time finding it, and we'll help you. Oh, man, I almost got through all of that. Sorry, Chattanooga Whiskey. Procure a bottle. Speaking of being sorry, Colin. The Turner Group, Colin, Amy Turner, awesome people. And I'm talking about crushing it in their own field. They do an awesome job in the home buying, home selling market. Central Florida, throughout the state of Florida, very well connected. Zach can attest to this. I'm going to keep talking to where he actually won't verbally attest to it. But he'll just nod his head if you're watching on YouTube. You get it. Yeah. We all get it. Hit up Colin. He's sad still. I think the program has really just crushed his insides. Buy a house for him. Make him happy again. And we've had three or four different subscribers and listeners go ahead and purchase houses through him. I know it's a huge decision to make. I know it's a murky process, but he does make it as painless as possible. And yeah, just a good, solid human being as well. All right. FSU finished spring practice. Was it last week, Chris? Was it last week? Time flies.
Yes, it was.
Wow. And what?
Wednesday.
Thank you. Wednesday. It's Monday currently. So we got a final interview with Mike Norvell. Among the topics of conversation was quarterback and whether he was ready to announce a starting quarterback yet. There was a lot in the answer. The yes or no of it was no, he was not ready. He also made it pretty clear, I'd say fairly clear, that he didn't feel like he was far off from making an announcement. Now, I'm not sure what further data points will happen between now and fall camp to make it to where he is closer to. Ultimately, I think, and I'm going to throw this to Chris because you've advocated for a little while now of this competition, since it is apparently a competition, allowing for it to continue to play out and let competitiveness play out. That's what I think is happening here. He didn't name it started with Ashton Daniels or Kevin Sperry. I think that's kind of part of by design at this point. Seems like he likes Ashton, Chris, the most, but I think he wants to kind of wait and see what happens in the next couple months and see who responds well to that.
Yeah, based on comments by coaches, comments by players, what we know of what we know about spring, it's pretty clear that nobody ran away with it at quarterback, and I think that's ultimately what Wednesday boiled down to, with not really being in a rush to name a starter. I also don't really think it's necessary. I don't think this is a quarterback-led team. I know they're going to preach that they want it to be and all of that. It's not going to be. That's not the position that's going to ultimately lead FSU to success if they find success. Daniels is a guy who I think will still be the starter. I think Mike's comments on Daniels in that Wednesday commentary were, along the lines of they felt comfortable with what he was, what they thought he would be, but Sperry had done a good job and they were going to leave it kind of open-ended. But I do ultimately expect Ashton Daniels to start for them.
I do think Ashton Daniels started spring better, ended spring better. There was that lull in between. And so in that sense, Chris, I know he didn't run away with it, but it just seemed like he clearly outperformed the younger player. I don't know how to read it.
I don't think it was wide margins. I don't think it's one of those things where he put it to bed and put it away, and it was abundantly clear that he's your clear-cut best option. I don't think the margins between the two are dramatic. I do think Daniels was the better one more consistently throughout the entirety of spring. I think there were turnover issues, and I think that was true for both of them. But ultimately, I think Daniels is one that they view as one who's best cog in the offense for how they're trying to architect it.
What are your reads on it, Zach? Having listened to Mike, the intel you've gotten, and make sure you unmute before you start talking. There you go.
How much coffee did you have this morning?
None. Why?
That's impressive.
I've had 1.5 cups of tea, but I'm just high on life, buddy.
High caffeine tea. I think it's Ashton Daniels. I think that's who it'll be at the end of the day. As for why he didn't announce a starter, I mean, I agree with Chris in that I don't think the margins were that big. But I do agree in that Ashton Daniels had the better overall spring. I mean, I think was it the third scrimmage? I think Kevin Sperry, it was not a good day for him. That's kind of the final, you know, data point for the coaching staff of the spring. And, you know, I think like after you get to the midway point and both the quarterbacks are still battling and there's not a clear cut number one, you know, I don't know that there's an immediate rush to right after the spring announce the starter. We talked about the two possibilities in the last pod. Like I don't hate the idea of having these two guys, you know, competing for it and not letting one of them, I guess, get complacent in the number one role. I see the other side of like, oh, you want to, you know, build the team around this leader. But to Chris's point, I really don't think either of them are like the leaders that you'd like hope from like a, you know, your quarterback one. And that's not to say that they're not, you know, encouraging of their teammates or, you know, you can't rally around, you know, poor performances of those guys, but we're not, you know, there's not like Jameis Winston type personalities in that group. And I think that's a fair point to bring up when you're talking about, hey, why are they waiting to announce a starter? Because I don't think there's some immense value you're going to get by giving Ashton Daniels the job right now.
Yeah, I don't think they're the massive difference makers at that position that allows you to separate them and kind of elevate them onto a podium or totem pole, top of the totem pole type of thing. They didn't build the team around a quarterback, which is a wild thing to say.
That's what we needed to get to. There we go. Because that is we're dancing around.
Dancing around it, baby. I think I dropped.
I know, but we're trying to be analytic with this conversation. And that's where it gets to is, hey, this redshirt freshman quarterback didn't have a great spring. He didn't have a bad spring. It was probably a whatever for a redshirt freshman quarterback who came in with the rating that Kevin Sperry did. Like it was fine. And the fact that you're transfer portal quarterback won without officially winning it, but it wasn't a runaway win, should be signaling alarms. I think that's kind of how it's like, you don't think so, Chris?
I didn't think highly of what Ashton Daniels is.
Right. That's not what I'm saying. Why do you always do this? What? That's
in line with what he is. Like,
well, Chris didn't think he was good, so your point doesn't matter. One of the
two to like ascend to this unbelievable level, we didn't know. Like, they are who we think they are. Kevin Sperry improved dramatically from year one to year two. He's showing good signs of developing into a good quarterback. He was never recruited to be a starting quarterback at a major program out of the gate, and year two is still out of the gate for a quarterback to a degree. And I know this day and age we're rushing everybody to the field, but Kevin Sperry is not one of those guys. Ashton Daniels, he's played a lot of football. Like, we know what he is.
Yeah, but and you're not impressed with what he is.
I don't think he's a difference maker that can ascend your program to a different level. I think
right. If you're going to be good, full circle, you said it was wild. Zach, help me here. Someone help me. Brett, get in there. Help.
You're taking it to the extreme. Like, no one has ever said on this pod that Ashton Daniels is a difference maker. You know, I think the nuance here is that I don't know that he's even, reached the potential that FSU was hoping that they got in him. That maybe some of the stuff that he tapped into at Auburn. And I think that's the nuance of like, okay, he's not living up to that, you know, that bar. And, you know, he's because of that, he's not separating from Kevin Sperry, who, to your point, is not a guy that they brought in to start, you know, maybe in year one or even year two. So that's an alarming thing that he has not separated from Kevin Sperry.
You're not alarmed about that?
amazing thing to me, though.
That's like, two different things.
Watch every snap of him at Auburn. Like, what did you expect him to be? The one thing he did well at Auburn, I felt like, was turn the turnovers down versus what he did at Stanford.
Chris, we agree.
It's fine. It's funny. My dad was talking about this yesterday. How his uncles and dad would all fight, and these full blooded Italians in the Northeast would all fight and argue over the same exact thing that they all agreed with. They just take these like slightly different stances with it. That's what we're discussing here. That's what's happening.
Yeah, no, I agree with you in that sense. Like, I don't have any expectations for the quarterback position because FSU neglects what it is actually supposed to be.
Yeah. I agree with that sentiment that it has not invested the way it needs to invest. We'll talk about quarterback recruiting in a bit. I don't know that there's – we'll get into it with litmus tests and whether there's a financial wherewithal to be able to at this point. And that is another alarming potential trend for me. The last thing on this quarterback position group battle deal right now, the Malachi Marshall of it all, I think we should at least address it. What? Okay, Zach, go ahead. What's the evil grin for?
I'm on the Malachi Marshall hive.
This does present an option. So for those who don't know, Malachi Marshall, JUCO All-American, National Player of the Year, led his team as a sophomore to a national championship, Iowa Western. Good numbers through 33 touchdowns, I think it is off the top of my head. His film is fun. Like, watch full games of him. It's a little sporadic. There's an improviser to him. But, like, the A throws are, like, holy, you know what? Like, they are impressive. But he is thin. He is smaller, and he's arriving in the summer, I think in June. Doesn't leave him a whole lot of time. Mike Norvell talked about him for the first time, really, I think, like, in depth. During the press conference on Wednesday, to Chris's point. And I thought I had a high amount of praise for him. He did address that there's an uphill battle with the timeline of that he has. But, like, do you think, Chris, like, that's part of why this is open as well? Like, you do allow him to come in and actually see what the competitive juices are and if there's enough physical tools there to potentially make this a thing come August?
I think Malachi provides juice and intrigue. I think it's open because nobody went and took it.
Okay. And do you find that alarming?
Yeah.
Yes!
But it's also not surprising because, well, they signed who they signed.
What should be the title of the podcast? Let's workshop it right now.
Alarming but not surprising.
A planned alarm. Yeah, they have those, like planned fire drills. That's what this is. We're just disrupting the entire class to go outside, stand and talk to our friends for 20 minutes, go back inside. The whole class is just the whole day is kind of up in the air. And
I'll add one footnote on Ashton Daniels. One thing Mike said that I listened to that popped in my ears was he's improved his deep ball throwing ability. They feel he has improved that. That is crucial for how this team is constructed, specifically the best player on the football team.
Well, Deuce, Mekhi Danzy, Devin Carter sounds like he's stretched the field at a really high level too. So, yeah, I mean, you some 2024 vibes and, like, you want to run the ball and take deep shots, right? That's ultimately what you want them to be. It makes sense if you can get to it. You got to be able to run the ball. It does sound like they've run the ball. We'll talk about the defense.
Fly from a different country this time.
You don't have to do that. You don't have to fly to Stanford either. What's the worst road trip you'll be making this year, Chris?
I don't know. Okay. I haven't dived into that schedule.
Louisville is going to.
I'm living a week at a time, buddy. I'm living a week at a time.
Pittsburgh.
I love Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it's always in November though. Like, why can't we do a nice brisk like mid-October Pittsburgh? Anyways, let's talk about quarterback recruiting. Because whereas the quarterback situation is a not surprising, alarming situation currently happening at Florida State. Actually, this is the same thing. It's a not surprising, alarming situation, too. Zach, you were feeling some level of optimism that it could be Chance Mounds, but in not so wonderful news, what? I call him Chance instead of Champ. Damn it. And I was too busy trying to get to the wonderful Mounds.
Your guy.
Let's talk about it because there have been some developments there. Some crystal balls have been dropped and not in Florida State's favor. a bit of a toughie as we try to navigate the trend that seems to be occurring. We'll see if FSU can combat it, but fill them in, please.
Yeah, little chance with Champ Mons now for Florida State. Notre Dame got him on campus this past weekend. I noted before in some article that that Notre Dame was a player now because they had missed on their other quarterback target who committed to Michigan, Camden Lapati. So Champ Mons became one of their top two options, along with Peter Bork, who's another top quarterback that's still on the board. And I believe that they're going to land Champ Mons. Notre Dame is. Crystal Balls went in yesterday on Sunday, on the last day of his visit there. And yeah, I mean, I just, you know, to Brendan's earlier point, what he was hinting at with FSU's financial constraints, I mean, that's a real issue here. Like there was concern, you know, Ohio State was another factor in the Champ Mons recruitment. And there was concern that FSU was not going to be able to pay up for, you know, a quarterback one compared to what Ohio State would have been able to pay for the second quarterback in their class. And that's obviously we understand that Ohio State's on a different tier than Florida State right now when it comes to just the state of the program. But, you know, from a financial standpoint, you'd expect FSU to be more, at least a little bit more competitive than that. And that is a real constraint that they're dealing with. So as far as where they go from here, I mean, they have a number of other quarterbacks that they've either brought in or offered previously. I think one that comes to mind immediately is UCF commit Logan Flaherty.
I should have stopped a second before. Let's talk about the money part of it. I think that is what people are going to gravitate to before we start talking about what's next. It's not ideal.
It's alarming, but not surprising.
I hope Brett has written this down in the back, and alarming, not surprising.
I will say that I think FSU has done a fairly good job in 2026 of building a board where they can compete for a majority of the guys that they've invested a lot of time, visits, etc. to. There are financials in some of those cases with some of the competitors they're competing with where, yes, they're going to be in that bind. It's just not going to happen. I mean, this is an example. Ty Keyes comes to mind as another one who will probably turn into an example that's at least concerning or going to be a battle. And, like, that's the thing. Somebody compiled the list of what we had down for spring visitors. I forget what the numbers were, but no 5 stars, X amount of 4 stars, great deal of 3 stars. That sort of speaks to the market that they can play in, both as a program that's won only 7 games in the last 2 years and one that financially I don't think is willing to go above and beyond like many of the people that they compete against in the region, the Georgia and Florida currently under Summerall, for example.
I think that's where the analytical mind goes, Chris, is with the trends we're seeing, and obviously there's a lot that can still happen. That's the caveat. But we follow trends in real time is what we do, is what we're paid to do. And you mentioned the lack of 5 stars on campus. It now seems like you're trending away from, you know, what was one of your top 3 or 4 quarterbacks on the board. So you're dropping a tier there. What is a lack of juice on the recruiting trail just because of the 7 wins of it all? And what is because of a lack of ability to financially compete at a level to overcompensate for that lack of juice? You feel what I'm putting down there?
I'm talking about tax.
Like, can they afford the tax? Or do they just not want to? I think that's what we need to kind of figure out. Is there is a tax. There's no doubt that there's a tax. Jeff Cameron calls it the suck tax in a eloquently not so eloquent way. And he has a beautiful way of combining those two worlds in one fell swoop. That exists. That's not the conversation. Are you able to combat that, or are you unwilling to?
I don't think the football staff is currently able to, because I think the people that help finance that are unwilling to.
I think that's a really good way to put it. And based on the information we currently have, I think that's accurate, and it's something we're going to have to dive into further and try to report on more as the summer progresses. But yeah, that seems
The issue with that is it forces you into a situation where your evaluations have to be exquisite. And FSU, and given they've changed some of the body that's now doing the evaluations,
yeah,
historically under Mike Norvell, their evaluations have not been very good. Fair. So, like, you're putting yourself in a situation where you're kind of damning yourself to a unless those new hires pay off with regards to evaluations hitting, allowing you to get more bargain bin in quotation type of players who then turn into better football players.
And so the downside with that, and you're playing odds games here, right? And that's just about acquiring as much high end talent as possible and trying to then retain it and giving yourself a chance to have the highest amount of draft picks, basically, is what you're kind of trying to do. Every program is going to do. And there's obviously tier systems with the resources. Where I think that there is a potential like fatal flaw in what we're currently seeing, I will preface it with this. I was on board with the idea of like, okay, you're no longer financially investing in Mike Norvell's staff, right? It's just that's until he proves otherwise, you're no longer throwing more money at that problem. You did that last offseason. You need
to have the ability to cut the cord at an affordable price versus just continuing to reload. You would have paid 70 some odd million last year. Your goal is probably to reduce that number more towards 50 this year. Number is going to stay large because Mike Norvell's percentage is such a dramatic piece. But yes, that was clearly something that was done from November until, you know, February when they were hiring and firing and people were moving on and such.
Yeah, and contracts not being extended for long periods of time, shorter, you know, all that stuff. And so that made sense to me, right? I understood that. The trade-off was, okay, if you're not investing directly in that aspect of the football program, which is obviously the biggest, right? It's the coaching staff who's driving the bus. What was going to be the front office staff? If you were kind of creating two separate branches there, are you investing in that? Which they have. They are using, from my understanding, like that as a selling point to try to sell tickets this year, like John Garrett. I don't know how much that's going to really get people excited, but were you going to be willing to invest in that? And two, were you going to invest in the infrastructure of the actual roster? I think that was the other part of it. What we've seen play out through the building of the 2026 roster, taking us back to the quarterback conversation of it, it does not seem like it was a full scale, hey, we're putting all of our resources as much as, you know, we possibly can, or maybe it is as much as they possibly can. That's another, you know, part of this, but with the resources to the roster, you know, they didn't go in this exorbitant above and beyond type of place. It's just they just couldn't get to it. And I think that's clear from the lack of just high-end bids and battles that they won. But now, so that's the 2026 roster. We had heard going into this offseason there might be a recalibration of how NIL is redistributed and in the way the athletic department administration tries to divert money there through some of the like third-party vendors. And so we've heard that. We've seen some steps to it. But so far, the results on the recruiting trail have not been what we would say. It's like they're operating with a ton of extra money to have that, you know, suck tax compensated for. That's all a long way of me saying it's like you're not – and here's where I have issues with this, guys. Why aren't you investing more in the future of the roster? I understand not investing in the head coach and his vision of it, but you also have the athletic director had a premium high choice of who he wanted to take over as the GM. It was one of their top candidates from the beginning. They got him. They're selling him as being someone who can help turn this thing around in a gradual period of time. But they do not seem to be putting in resources that are allowing those evaluations to go and secure 2027 kids who are going to then in 2027, 2028, 2029 be building blocks for whether it's Mike Norvell's staff, a new staff, whatever. You're not positioning yourself to get the best players on campus possible for the long-term, you know, outlook of this program. And so that means you're going to – what? So we're talking about 2026 feeling like kind of a lame duck year for just as a fan base and apathy. Shit, that's not getting any better based on what you're compiling right now from a talent standpoint. Yeah. So that was a long way of me saying that. I probably could have said it more shorter, but yeah, I'm better on paper.
I think it goes back to the inability question or unwillingness, right? does the athletic department right now have the ability to go tap into, you know, their donor base and go ask for additional funding outside of rev share? Because as it stands right now, I really do not think they're working with much outside of just the rev share allotment for football. And that is a huge issue, because if you look at what's being reported across the country, I mean, like the roster, you know, the rosters across the nation are only getting more and more expensive. I mean, there's a thought that within a few years we could see our first $100 million like roster.
Yeah, that I think is, but $40 million is like kind of happening right now. Like that's not out of reach, is based on what's being reported. I know people are.
The point is that it's an arms race, right? And FSU's not playing in it.
Yeah, they're assuming it's all going to be very structured. I mean, this has been pretty clear from the beginning. So this is an older talking point, but it still exists.
My point is, right now, let's say that the athletic department, you know, has reversed course, or they decided that their initial read of this you know, market, where they thought that this was all going to be regulated, was wrong. And they're like, okay, we need to fix this. We need to go actually put, you know, money into the football program outside of rev share, make sure that they have this, you know, third party arm, I guess, of additional funding to go and acquire players. Can they do that?
They've asked for money for things in recent years, and the return results of that haven't been good enough, in my opinion, to keep doing it. You only have X amount of people that can move mountains for you as a program. And that's true for any program, and for FSU, it's certainly true. And I think a lot of those people are very worn out by the financial ask that's gone on. And there's also an element, and I'm spitballing this. This isn't something I've been told. I would think some people in charge would have to think, do I ask them now, or do I ask them after I fired a guy and want to do something different next time? And you got to pick which one. And I think there's always
an element. That goes back to the point of like, okay, why didn't you make the decision last fall if this was an inevitability?
Yeah. Like, the craziest thing about all this, and I think I've told you this, Zach, I actually think this staff is Mike Norvell's maybe best recruiting staff.
Yeah.
Like Nick Williams is an effective recruiter. Cam Martin's an effective recruiter. Ernie Sims is an upgrade at linebacker as a recruiter.
Tim's
done a good job consistently. Herb does what he does, kind of lives in his niche, but he pulls it off with assembly and O-line. It's portal over high school. In general, like, they have their stuff more together. It's more organized. The last 90 days of it have been, like, good. The issue is that those rear battles where they are trying to fight for high-end kids, Ty Keyes, Gary Walker, Champ Mons comes to mind. There's plenty of DNs we can point out because they've had a lot of high-level DNs on campus. Fred Ard, Santana Harvey, Abraham Sese come to mind as a few. Chicken Garore is another one. Linebacker, I think Makai Allen's going to be one of those where they're really in that, but are they going to be in it in the end is going to come down to financials. I think it's going to be interesting to watch. I think they're going to have to pick their punches. I think they're going to be limited in the amount of punches they can throw from a financial standpoint. I don't think they're working with some exorbitant amount. I think they're working with rev share and a little bit over that maybe, but not dramatically. And it's certainly not comparable to some of the schools they're going against, including multiple institutions with new first-year head coaches who are clearly more invested into first-year head coaches. UF, Auburn come immediately to mind as two examples of that.
This is where I feel gaslit sometimes.
But I don't think they have an interest in doing it. To answer your question, Brent, I don't think there's an appetite for it currently.
I agree with that. All signs that we have, right, without having access to every text message and email and inner workings of people's minds, every sign that we have would point to that, Chris. I agree with you. And it's frustrating. I think the Florida State fan base, that those who pay attention to recruiting, those who are interested in the roster building process, those who subscribe to websites like ours and War Chant, like those who subscribe to how valuable recruiting is and put their time and energy and money into it, I think are tired of hearing that. And I understand that's a smaller portion of the fan base. The grand scale just wants to see wins and losses. Some portions of that group don't even really care too. But ultimately, the recruiting aspect of it just not humming correctly for years, and now having to hear that it's not, there's not an appetite or an ability, either or, to go ahead and be all in at a program that has generally been all in financially is sobering, disappointing, frustrating. Yeah, I don't know how else to describe it. It's and that's where I do feel a level of like gaslit when, you know, Board of Trustees meeting, they're saying they're doing their best job, and if it wasn't for football doing poorly, people wouldn't be talking about it. You know, maybe there would be more money being put into the, you know, a more willingness for people from a third party standpoint, NIL standpoint, to invest, and so we wouldn't be talking about it to this degree. But ultimately, the results are the results. The situation is the situation because of moves made. Some of that's been bad luck. Some of that, like Mike Norvell going from 13 wins to 2, like no one could have foreseen that. But ultimately, you leveraged into buildings, to infrastructure. That's how you thought this was going to play out. You thought you'd have a certain amount of money budgeted to the roster because that would be, you know, very, you told people that's how this was going to go. It was going to be CSC was go, or whatever, you know, entity was going to operate and have guardrails. And here we are, you know, a year and a half into that. I know it's still relatively new. It has not happened yet. And you're now talking about 2027 class falling behind. Well, then what's going to happen in 2028? Is there going to be a new influx of money for a new coaching staff? Maybe, maybe not. Like there's no evidence in the last 3 or 4 years since the 2023 season, and I guess 2024 to an extent, that they are willing to go above it and beyond a certain price range, whereas the market continues to go. And that includes, by the way, guys, Miami, right? That includes, you know, one of your arch rivals, and they are willing to. And your footprint, Alabama's GM is talking about $40 million rosters. He's going on podcasts talking about that. Like this whole people rolling their eyes of like, oh, people are just talking behind the scenes of what money actually is, and it's funny money, and how people are putting their names to it, and people who make decisions are. I don't know. It's either going to get better or it's not, and it's going to be stagnant. And that's a long way of us pontificating over something that we've been pontificating over for a year to 2 years now. So I shrug my shoulders at it to an extent, but it does bother me when we start getting into the weeds of it, because it feels hopeless at times. I don't know. It feels like this is just kind of where it's gone. Chris, what time did you have to get out of here?
I'm good. We can go till whenever.
Oh, okay. You're enjoying it?
He opted to walk.
Okay. Your son to school?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I wasn't sure if someone just left. Left the program. All right. Defensively, let's talk about that transition into. Oh, you know, one more recruiting note, Chris. I'll let you talk about basketball. It sounds like Luke Laux did his thing, and did he maybe stuff Kentucky in a locker?
Well, real quick, when you cut Zach off many moons ago, you were talking about other quarterbacks that have come by. So,
oh, yeah. People don't care about that. But go ahead.
There were three other ones other than Flaherty that came in during the spring. DJ Hunter from Buford, who I believe was injured last year, did not play much. Kaysen Myers, who's from Auburn, Alabama. And Max Johnson from Owensboro, Kentucky. Are the other 2027 quarterbacks that were here in the spring who have not committed to other programs since their visits. Like Logan is currently committed to UCF, but there's a belief he might back off that.
Yeah.
Good. I didn't know.
Oh, Zach. Okay. Yeah. We just wanted to get the boxes checked. Yeah. If you want to get into it, Zach, go ahead. I don't think there's a whole lot.
No, I mean, I'm still digging on the direction they'll exactly go. I know that they are talking with Logan Flaherty still, who I expect to not end up at UCF. And he's got a couple, you know, G5, also some Power Four schools involved. He's an in-state quarterback out of Port Charlotte High School. And then, you know, like Chris mentioned, there's a few other names. Well, we'll get a better idea of the direction that FSU goes if/when Chip Mons officially commits to Notre Dame.
But those confidence, they are flying.
What if it's wonderful news if there's a chance that Champ actually picks Florida State and we're just all wrong about this and this is all for nothing? It's this hand wringing.
No. Be refreshing.
I think the discussion overall is worthwhile, regardless of what happens with Chance.
Damn it. That's my opportunity. All right, Chris, let's talk about someone who is doing more with less, and it's a feel good, a lot of good news and good, you talking about vibes, off-season vibes? Good vibes around basketball right now based on how they finished the regular season and now some of the things that they're doing in the transfer portal. We go along with, Chris, a really good freshman class that they're bringing in as well.
Yeah, it's beautiful when a plan comes together. Thomas Bassong was their top priority to retain. They retained him. You know, you got to make choices on a budget, and a guy like Martin Somerville is someone who they like, but they had to let walk, and he'll end up somewhere pretty good. And Martin's a very talented player, certainly would have been, I think, in contention as like a sixth man for FSU next year. But you have to make that decision to allow you to go get what you need to get to construct a roster where you have 7 to 8 pieces that you know you can rely upon heavily when you have to win games. As for what they've done in the portal, it's been really impressive. They had an initial list of 9 names, including a 10th name being added in Justin Pippen. Of those initial 9, they've landed 4 of those 9. So, like, that speaks to the idea of they knew what they wanted when the whole thing began. They knew who they thought might go in. They knew who they could get on campus, and they've done that. I'll start with local Anthony Robinson II, Mizzou point guard, high-level defender, really good 2 years ago offensively, struggled some this past year offensively, took a step back in that regard. I think they're banking on him returning more to his prior form offensively, and he's a better defender than they had at a position a season ago, and they didn't have a bad one. He's just a high-level defender. His brother, Amari Robinson, is also going to join him. Amari was at TSC here locally. Amari's more an end-of-bench kind of guy, but those guys are important for practice. They help you a great deal. Most recent commitment, Sebastian Rancic. They beat Kentucky for the Colorado big man. I call him a stretch forward. You can call him a big wing. You can call him an undersized interior, whatever you want to call him. He's a guy that can do a little bit of everything. He's probably going to shoot at a really high clip from the perimeter. I think he might be one of their better perimeter shooters on this entire squad. He's, to me, he's Wiggins for them last year with more of a willingness to go do some stuff down low as far as blocking shots, changing shots, grabbing rebounds. I think that's what they view him as in the sense of putting together sort of a starting five. He can be that. You also can rotate him with Marcise Ponder, really talented high school center you're bringing in, a guy that you probably don't want to play more than about 20 minutes per game next year, but you want to be able to play 20 minutes per game and then have somebody rotate who's kind of a different look. I think that's how him and Rancic will play off each other. I also think with their remaining roster spot, they're going to try to get an interior big to add to that rotation so they can give people different looks, whether it's being really big and physical or being kind of big and stretching you out, putting maybe 5 out on the floor on the outside. Cameron Taylor was an earlier commitment from UNC Asheville. He's a 6'7 wing. He's got a whole lot of stuff in the toolbox in the sense of what he can do. He's really fun. I think he's a guy that's going to blossom and be a really, really good player. And then it all started with Cincinnati wing, kind of big guard, small forward, Sean Abeev. He was a McDonald's All-American, went to Cincy, didn't shoot it very well, but he's a tough shot maker in the sense of he can hit difficult shots. He's also got a really nice athletic profile. I think, again, that's one where Luke is betting on he and his staff can tap into that and get more out of it than maybe he showed in year one. And he was a guy who was extremely highly viewed coming out of prep ranks. You know, he's just entering his second year of college. They can take big steps forward. So that group combined with Amari Robinson, combined with the high school group, combined with the returning players, they've assembled a group that probably can go comfortably 9 to 10 deep. I think down the stretch, you try to find basically 7 to 8 that you can really lean on and play heavy minutes in those crucial situations. I think they feel really good about roster construction. It just impresses me. I mean, one, the portal actually doesn't close till tomorrow in the sense of guys going in, and FSU's pretty much already executed their entire plan and pulled it off. Two, they won some really nice battles, specifically Rancic. They beat out Kentucky head-to-head for him. Cameron Taylor was another guy that had, like, Kansas dealing with him prior to FSU getting him on campus. So there was definitely interested parties that were schools that are more significantly viewed than FSU. And FSU did what they needed to do there. Yeah, Luke and them have it going on. They know what they're doing. They're very good at understanding basically the pool they can swim in, the financials they have, what can we do to maximize those dollars and assemble a roster that can be competitive. And I said it to my son, who's a huge basketball fan. Luke's too damn competitive not to want to be good. Like, that's the best part of that man's DNA as a coach. Like, he's a good coach, good player development guy, good people person. But he is so competitive that he is just not willing not to be good. So he is trying to speed it along as fast as possible for FSU to become a team that can return to the NCAA tournament and compete at a high level in the ACC. And I think they took a really positive step here.
It's nice. That's refreshing, isn't it? to talk. And you could hear Chris in his voice to talk about something with plans and executed plans and potential upside. It's nice.
Must be nice.
Did he really fly 12 hours to get the
yeah, win? I was told. I that obviously had made the rounds, and then yesterday I had somebody that would know if he did that tell me yes, he did indeed do that. So yeah, cool. I mean, he flew to Slovakia, which is where Rancic is from, and visited with his mother, and probably was a crucial piece in that. As you're battling Kentucky, you got to figure out ways. How do we make FSU more appealing than a school that's viewed as a blue blood? And I know Kentucky's had whatever they've kind of been in recent years, but they're still viewed as a certain caliber of a basketball program.
Yeah, they have the funding of one.
Right.
Ooh, some of these pictures of Slovakia are really pretty.
So, yeah, no, I'm a Luke Homer. I'll admit that readily. I think highly of the guy. Homer. I thought he was a good hire, knowing all the parameters of the situation he was walking into. But I've been ultra impressed by just how aggressive he goes after. And it's not just him. It's his staff. Michael Fly, the GM, does an excellent job. Guys throughout that entire staff do a very good job. And they do an impressive job of kind of like being who they say they're going to be. For example, I think Derwin Kitchen was at the Pitt tournament watching LeJay Jones and Robert McCray, who are trying to, you know, take that path to the professional level, wherever it will be. And they were playing Portsmouth. I believe he was up there with them, supporting them, probably working with them to a certain degree. I just thought that was impressive. Like, they do a lot of little things that come off to me as, like, they have it together. They know what they're trying to be. They're very good at leaning into that. They're also good at finding players. So
I'm looking up things about Slovakia right now. They're part of NATO. There's that.
They were good in the they were surprising in the Olympic hockey tournament.
Ah, there we go. What else do we want to learn about Slovakia? Only 5 million people, but it's 47th richest country per capita. It's good. It's above average, right? All right. I have to leave in like 10 minutes. Is that enough time to talk defense, or do you want to save that for next week? Let's keep kicking the can down the road.
I got some notes that I have.
All right.
Some defensive stuff.
I
think a guy that really ended the spring well was Rylan Kennedy. I talked to someone in the building who said that he was disruptive at the beginning of the spring and was generating pressures, but was not always finishing on those plays. And it sounded like that got better. That person told me he's disruptive. He can bull rush and get off blocks, which is a big thing. He'll be a warrior for us.
Ooh, yeah. Okay.
That was one of the more encouraging things I heard of obviously a super pivotal piece of that defense.
Can we just do the caveat of, does that mean the guy's blocking him? We just need to protect ourselves there. I've been hurt before.
I think there were some struggles with the O-line. That's been documented. That's been talked about. I mean, it's been in the questioning line to people throughout the spring too. I do think Kennedy's been good, though. I think him and Jalen Anderson being the guy who would probably back him up at that spot, have been a nice
one too.
But yeah, I think he had a really nice, I want to say, got a deflected pick. Like, he didn't deflect it, but he ended up the recipient of it. Did a nice job with that. I think they feel good there. I will add to that on the D-line discussion, like, obviously we expect the Twins to be good. You need Kennedy to be good. You need some depth behind Kennedy. Anderson provides that. They talk so much about Daniel Lyons, and Daniel does physically look good. I'm just hesitant to believe, like, he becomes a different tier player than he's been in his career. He's shown promise. I think Bama last year is a good example of him showing sort of the versatility he can possess and some of the different things he can do. But I'm hesitant to, like, jump on the bandwagon of thinking he's a primary defensive line piece for you in the sense of leading the charge.
In all reality, Daniel Lyons should be a rotational player at Florida State, not a guy that you're relying on to go and dominate games. And I don't think he is that. Like, I have not heard. I asked about that specifically. Like, hey, has he taken a next step? And the answer I got was not really. Like, he's been good in the spring and kind of, you know, is what he is. But I don't think he's taken a step to the point where, you know, you're expecting him to be this difference maker up front.
The issue is they kind of need him to be. I think that's
of course.
And they speak about that manner.
Yeah, that speaks to the overall and this is something I want to get at. You guys talked about it before about how the running game during practice has looked solid. I think my biggest takeaway on defense coming out of the spring is that I don't think the run defense is going to be very good. And that has a large part to do with the D-line and the lack of depth of it, and also the lack of size, which is something that we obviously brought up before the spring started.
Tony White's defense, as he's generally throughout his career, has done a good job manufacturing like an average run defense to a good one, depending on the tools. I know the Florida game lingers in our mind. That happened. We can't really
– some of the stats for Tony historically, I'm asking this as a question, is it generating negatives that help balance out, also allowing some decent runs?
Yeah, I think so. I would have to look it up. What I remember, yes, to an extent. Also, like we saw against Miami, he is willing to kind of sell out, whether it's like just cheating safeties in or – you know, having them attack at a more aggressive rate, I guess, and willing to live with giving up explosives or at least daring, you know, college quarterbacks to do it. And you know, we saw against Miami, they were able to hit those, and that changes the complexion of the game pretty quickly. So I think that's part of it too, is like stopping the run is a top priority for him. But they also wanted to get smaller this year. Really, they wanted to get faster this year, and I don't think they had access to players who were big and fast at a high clip. They had to kind of sell some things there. So I know they take some people take offense to us saying that, and some people actually agree with that internally. And that's just, you know, that is
one guy I do want to praise because consistently I heard was good in the spring was Deontay McCray.
Yes, same thing. One,
looks like he's in great shape. And two, I just heard he was very good at being consistent day to day, like bringing the same type of motor to it consistently.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that he was dependable. That was the word that I, yeah.
He's gravitated more to being solely inside too versus last year where he was moving around a bit more.
Did you hear a lot about the Desiers? I heard like some things here and there, but it wasn't the same level of like, they were really excited about them last year. We were hearing about them all the time. I don't know if that was relative to expectations, but I hadn't heard them as much.
Yeah. I wonder if that's surprised them so much last year. So, you know, like they keep bringing up Devin Carter. Do we think Devin Carter's a better player than Deuce Robinson because he's not being brought up as much as
– No, but he capitalized on opportunities.
He also practiced more than Deuce Robinson too.
Yeah. That might be part of it. They might be a little bit limited.
One of the twins definitely was a little banged up in the back half of the camp. Not anything severe or bad or concerning or that will persist or last. Just something that probably maybe limited some reps or at least his explosiveness and ability.
Linebacker, it does sound, I know some people are going to be rolling their eyes. It does sound like Omar Graham and Blake Nicholson finished the spring as the two like most dependable in the staff's view of things. So I know there's high hopes for Chris Jones. I know it's also early, and I don't think he was bad. I didn't hear any like bad things about him. They've talked about him in a way of like sounding dependable. Mekhi Bayer.
Got banged up
early on, and I had higher hopes. Shrug shoulders. Like that seems like that room's going to be what it's been. Maybe if it is more consistent, you're fine with everything else. It's just that was a position group that they wanted to have more malleability and thought they could find some like financial like value in it in terms of being able to find some difference makers at a good ROI. I don't know that is how I feel about it based on the way they talked about it and what we've heard, but yeah, it's just, it kind of seems like a ho-hum position right now. But I am willing to be surprised. Secondary, tough to tell with cornerbacks. Jabril Rawls dinged up most of spring. Quindarius Jones, we had good things about, but he was limited too. Nehemiah Chandler, super hit or miss. Like that's one. That's what his playing style was at South Alabama. That's what it sounds like it's been here. Tackling up and down. Make some plays in the air, and then we'll allow some plays as well. I don't know who the fourth corner is. I know they primarily rotate three, but if you do need a fourth, like maybe Charles Lester. I heard he was awful one scrimmage, good the next. I don't know.
Yeah, I've heard with Charles, he's actually pretty like impressive, like when it comes to getting involved in the running game and
nice,
and
that's good,
and tackling. But his struggles have been. Like they feel like they need like a safety over top with him a lot because he could get beat on the outside
That is tough. That is tough at cornerback.
Yes, yes. So I've heard that him and Nehemiah Chandler are kind of like opposite ends of the spectrum. Nehemiah Chandler apparently can like hang with anyone in coverage and is excellent in that regard, but really struggles when it comes to tackling. That's not a strength for him. And then it's kind of the opposite with Charles Lester.
Because going back to some of the South Alabama stuff, like he was often willing to, it just was awful, awful tackling. So that has to get better. Just factually speaking, that's it. Some of the data points would point to that as well. Safety group, you know, sounds like they like Ashlyn Barker. He's been solid. That's your Rover. I know they did some mixing and matching, but he will be your Rover. Mekhi Jones as the field safety nickel hybrid. That's solid.
And Sicily described as mature for his being a younger college football player.
So yeah, that seems like a reliable piece. I don't know. I mean, Zach, are they talking about him being dynamic or just like that's a good piece?
I think just like good. I don't think they're he has 1 year of college football experience under his belt and he was solid as a true freshman. But I don't think they're expecting him to go and be, an absolute difference maker, but I don't think he'll be a liability either.
You mentioned difference maker, and I think that's, and he probably will, like last year they were having issues at that spot with just reliability. So,
that's crap at that spot, I'm sure.
That did not help. And they've made that pretty, that's been a talking point for them. I just don't know how many difference makers they have at any level, any given level. And that's kind of what I go back to is, that's why I'm skeptical on the defense though. Like, I just don't know who you have, like who's capable of taking over any given game. Maybe it's by committee approach and you can live on that, right? That is not to say that can't work, but generally the best defenses have multiple difference makers on it. Or a supporting cast of, all above average to very good. I just don't know. I mean, who are your difference makers at any given level? Raylan Kennedy, they're banking on.
I was going to say, I think the hope is Kennedy and the twins up front. And then I think you're hoping that allows your secondary to be better, which is a question I consistently ask to Tony White and Mike Norvell about pass rush grading secondary stuff.
Yeah.
You don't know what that is till you play somebody not wearing the same colors and doing the same tendencies that your team does throughout 15 spring practices and all of the preseason. So really you don't know till the bullets fly against somebody else.
Yeah. My take is that they're going to be better when it comes to generating pass rush, but take a significant step back when it comes to stopping the run.
What were they last year in run defense? Cause I think that like the totals weren't bad. There's just some games where you got absolutely gashed. Run defense, yards per carry. 27th.
Yeah. So I think they're going to take a step back from that. Part of that is due to your guy, Darryl Jackson, not being there in the middle.
I'm the president of his fan club.
So, I mean, that's a big deal. And
they were 41st against, and here's this, they were 41st against Power 5 teams though. So not great.
Yeah. I've heard that the offense has just been able to have a ton of success running the ball. And that is a real concern for FSU. And I think, a guy that didn't practice during the spring on the D-line, Jordan Sanders, kind of feels like he's going to be an important piece, whether he's able
to be.
Yeah, help them in that regard.
All right. Let's get out of here, shall we? Anything else? We feel good? It's a good solid episode, guys. Not bad for late April. All right. For Chris Knee, Zach Blaustein, Brett Nevitt, somewhere out there in the ether. Did I say my name already?
No, you didn't.
I'm Brendan Sinone. This has been Knowles 24/7's on the bench, sticking the landing.